This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
Imagine you're scrolling through an e-commerce app right now. You know, you've got some laundry detergent in your cart, maybe a new phone case, and
Just running normal weekend errands.
right, exactly. But right below that, you place a fully refundable deposit for a 183 centimeter tall, 42 kilogram robot roommate.
Which is just wild to think about.
It really is. And one that actively reads your emotions, by the way. You might think having a humanoid robot in your living room is still sci-fi, but we're going to show you why thousands of people have already put down deposits for one this month.
Yeah, this isn't 5 years from now. It's happening right now.
Welcome to today's deep dive. We are holding this fascinating, highly detailed briefing document from June 2026, and our mission today is to explore this massive pivot, how humanoid robots are officially graduating from these, like, industrial novelties to everyday consumer products.
Right, the era of the robot doing backflips in a controlled research lab is basically over.
Yeah, and we're going to uncover the hidden software wars, the physical hardware bottlenecks, and these crazy geopolitical chess moves happening behind the scenes to control them. Because looking at the numbers here, 4,600 people put down a 3,000 RMB deposit. That's about $415 on JD.com this month.
Wow.
Yeah, for UBTech's new UWorld U1 companion robot, and it launches on June 30th.
So in just a couple of weeks, I mean, it's a profound shift in consumer technology. For years, the robotics industry has really struggled with this transition from industrial applications to domestic ones.
Because it's a totally different environment, right?
Exactly. A robot building a car in a cage is dealing with a highly predictable environment. But a living room,
yeah,
with pets, children, unpredictable furniture layouts, that isn't entirely just an engineering problem.
Right. And what pushed this from an engineering problem to an actual, you know, consumer product launch seems to be a major policy shift.
Oh, absolutely. The
And it's,
policy is the catalyst here.
yeah, China's Ministry of Commerce, along with, I think, seven other departments, just issued these AI plus consumption guidelines. It includes 17 specific measures, basically pushing humanoid robots directly into the consumer market and smart nursing robots into elder care.
And when a central government issues 17 specific measures targeting a single hardware category, it acts as a massive de-risking mechanism.
Like a green light for the whole industry.
Exactly. It tells motor manufacturers, sensor designers, software engineers that the regulatory pathways are going to be cleared for them.
So the government is basically subsidizing the initial friction of bringing this wild piece of hardware to market,
Yeah, precisely.
which explains the 4,600 pre-orders in just 17 days. But okay, let's unpack this, because it's kind of like putting down a reservation for a new Tesla, but for a, well, a 183 centimeter male presenting robot, or they have a 168 centimeter female presenting one.
Right, the U1 models.
Yeah, with 88 distinct joints and an emotion AI that locally encrypts your conversations. But wait, I have to push back here. A robot, my height, walking around my house, analyzing my emotions on the spec sheet, says a 4-hour battery.
Yeah, the battery life is definitely a bottleneck right now.
Right. Like, are people actually ready for this? It sounds a bit like an expensive novelty.
Well, for the domestic living room, there's certainly an element of early adopter novelty right now. I mean, continuous power draw of 88 motorized joints plus real-time AI inference, it's
It's
immense.
basically a walking supercomputer.
Exactly. But if you look at where the real institutional momentum is, you see the actual roadmap. It's not just domestic.
Oh, where else is it going?
Well, Fourier Intelligence, for example, they just landed a 10 million RMB contract to deploy their GRX humanoids in Malaysia's Perkasoh National Rehab Center.
Wait, really? A rehab center in Malaysia?
Yeah. So these robots are handling cognitive rehabilitation for up to 700 patients at a time.
Oh, wow. So they are moving these into medical facilities, not just living rooms.
Right. And in a clinical setting, a 4-hour battery life is a standard therapeutic shift. It works perfectly. They use advanced voice and visual recognition to read a patient's facial cues, track eye movements, and guide them through neurological recovery exercises.
That's incredible. But I mean, mechanically speaking, how does a robot actually guide cognitive rehab better than, say, an app on a tablet screen?
Well, a tablet is two-dimensional and static, right?
Mm-hmm.
A humanoid robot can demonstrate physical movements, adjust its spatial positioning based on the patient's mobility.
Oh, I see. It has a physical presence.
Exactly. And it can use micro expressions to maintain patient engagement. It's a highly sensitive deployment of the technology. And it shows how Southeast Asia's medical infrastructure is fundamentally deepening its reliance on Chinese robotics.
So the hardware is leaving the factory and entering these highly sensitive areas of human life. But, you know, that physical interaction relies entirely on the robot actually understanding its environment.
Yes. The brain of the robot is the key.
Right. Because while different companies are building the physical bodies, a robot without a hyper-advanced brain is just a really fancy, heavy mannequin.
The physical chassis is essentially just a vessel at this point.
Yeah, and that brings us to this invisible software war, because Alibaba is making a massive play here. They are piloting this Qwen robot suite for enterprise clients.
Ah, yes, the Qwen suite.
Yeah, in our briefing notes, it features three modules: navigation, manipulation, and something called a world model. And this blew my mind. It's trained on a staggering 8.6 million video text pairs and 200 million frames of video.
It's an astronomical amount of data.
Right. Pulling data from 14 different types of robotic arms.
What's fascinating here is how the term world model is really the fulcrum of this entire industry.
How so? Like, how is it different from the AI we already use?
Well, a traditional large language model like the chatbots we use every day operates on token prediction.
Yep.
It just predicts the next logical word based on text patterns.
Huh.
But a world model has to predict actual physical physics. Like, if the robot pushes a glass of water to the edge of a table, the world model has to understand gravity, friction, and, you know, the fragility of the glass.
Oh, I see. So it's essentially the difference between reading a textbook about riding a bike and having the physical muscle memory to actually balance on one.
That is a highly accurate way to frame it, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And training that physical intuition requires exposing the AI to hundreds of millions of video frames so it can observe and internalize the laws of physics.
And by integrating data from 14 different robot arms, Alibaba is generalizing that physical intuition, right?
Exactly. Alibaba's strategy isn't to build the robot. The hardware space is crowded. There are over 150 Chinese hardware firms fighting over metal and motors.
A brutal, low-margin war.
Yeah. So Alibaba wants to become the Android of robotics. They want to own the software ecosystem that all these hardware companies will inevitably need to use.
Okay, but wait. If Alibaba pulls this off, does that mean every future robot, regardless of what logo is stamped on its chest, basically operates with the exact same personality and underlying logic? Are we looking at a monopoly on robot brains?
It absolutely creates a monoculture of machine intelligence.
Yes.
But, and this is a big but, to execute that strategy, they have to overcome a severe physical limitation.
The processing power.
Yes. Processing 200 million frames of video requires immense physical computing power. And this is where this grand robotic vision hits a massive physical brick wall.
Right, because you can't run a world model purely on the cloud. A microsecond of lag could mean the robot drops a hot pan on your foot.
Exactly. It has to be processed locally on the edge, inside the robot.
Which brings us to the silicon reality check. Let's look at the numbers for SMIC, which is China's largest semiconductor foundry. Cambricon wants to produce 500,000 AI chips in 2026.
A huge order.
Massive. But they're relying on SIMP's 7-nanometer N+2 process, and the yield is stuck at around 20%.
Yeah, a 20% yield is economically devastating.
To put that in perspective, it's like a bakery trying to bake 5 wedding cakes, but 4 of them burn in the oven every single time.
That's exactly what's happening.
Right.
For every 100 chips manufactured, 80 have to be thrown in the garbage due to defects.
And modern fabs aim for, what, 90% yields to be profitable?
Typically, yeah. Over 90%.
So why is this specific 7-nanometer line failing so spectacularly?
It comes down to the lithography equipment. Because of international trade restrictions, SESMIC does not have access to extreme ultraviolet or EUV lithography machines.
So they have to use older tech.
Right. They're forced to use older deep ultraviolet or DUV machines. And to get the transistors small enough using older lasers, they have to use a technique called multi-patterning.
Which is basically exposing the silicon to the light 2, 3, or 4 times just to carve out those tiny features.
Exactly. And every single time you realign that wafer for another pass, you introduce a microscopic risk of misalignment. Do that 4 times across millions of transistors.
And error rate just compounds.
Exponentially, yes. That is why 80% of the chips are failing.
And Cambricon isn't even the only company dealing with this. The briefing details that Huawei's Ascend 950PR processor is fighting for space on that exact same low-yield production line.
It's a massive bottleneck.
Yeah, you have two tech giants starved for silicon fighting over a line that scraps most of its output. Meanwhile, they compare this to TSMC's 2-nanometer process globally, which boasts over 60% yields.
Which represents a technological gap of more than 7 years.
Wow. And the memory chips are delayed too, right?
Yes. Running these world models requires high bandwidth memory, or HBM. But CXMT's HBM3 production is facing severe delays. Meanwhile, competitors like Samsung and SK Hynix are already prepping the next generation, HBM4.
Okay, but our briefing notes that China has a 52.3% domestic AI chip market share.
Right, but even though they have that market share on paper, the actual physical supply is crippled.
Oh, so that number is almost an illusion.
Mechanically speaking, yes. And this critically endangers the government's 2 trillion RMB data center plan, which legally requires 80% domestic chips. If they can't physically produce them at a viable yield, the plan stalls.
So because of these hardware limitations, access to the most efficient, top-tier global AI software model is more critical than ever.
Absolutely. If you have fewer, slower chips, you need hyper-efficient software to compensate.
But the geopolitical door to that software is being slammed shut.
Yes, we are witnessing a monumental shift here.
The U.S. Commerce Department recently instituted a complete export ban on Anthropic's Fable 5 and Mythos 5 model.
Completely banning them for non-U.S. citizens.
Yeah. And according to reports in our briefing from Semaphore and Fortune, this was actually triggered when Amazon warned regulators about suspicious Chinese-linked access to the Mythos model architecture.
And we have to note, this is a totally fundamentally different way of doing things. It's a shift from banning physical chips to banning software models.
Right, because a chip is a physical object you can seize at customs. A software model is just a massive file of mathematical weights. You can put it on a thumb drive.
Or transmit it over an encrypted network.
Exactly. Which is why the implementation of this ban has caused such a fierce backlash. I mean, over 100 cybersecurity experts, including Alex Stamos, the former security chief at Facebook, along with experts from NVIDIA, Google, and Zoom, they signed an open letter demanding the ban be lifted.
The cybersecurity community is very concerned about this.
So what does this all mean? The experts are arguing that blocking allied nations from accessing these defensive AI tools actually gives the attackers the upper hand. Are we essentially locking the good guys out of the armory here?
It's a really valid concern. It comes down to a process called red teaming.
Okay, what is that?
To defend against an AI-driven cyber attack, you need an equally powerful AI to simulate that attack on your own network. You use the top-tier model to relentlessly attack your own systems, find the weak points, and patch them.
Oh, I see. So if you're blocked from using Fable 5...
then you can't simulate the attacks that advanced adversaries are already developing. It places international AI developers, like those in South Korea, for example, in a terrible squeeze.
So they're legally isolated from U.S. software while simultaneously being pressured by China's rapidly expanding hardware footprint in their own region.
Exactly. And that brings us directly to the listener. Because all of this, the consumer robots, the software monopolies, the burn chips, the export bans, it's all rushing toward a society that has absolutely no rules for it.
A total legal void.
Yeah, the briefing highlights commentary from attorney Kim Kyung-jin from South Korea, and he points out a glaring blind spot. Countries like South Korea have practically zero legal framework for consumer robots.
None at all.
Like, think about the UbiTech U1 we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
There are no privacy laws for emotion reading AI operating in your living room.
Right. We have privacy laws for data sent to the cloud. But when the AI is processing and encrypting your family's emotional data locally, physically inside a moving machine in your house, the laws get incredibly murky. And there are no safety standards, no import certifications for highly autonomous, heavy consumer tech. And the impending reality is that this tech isn't waiting for the laws to catch up.
No, the industry is sprinting ahead.
Yeah, MWC Shanghai is currently hosting humanoid penalty kick challenges. Agibot's CTO is keynoting major conferences. Next month, the WAIC 2026 conference is debuting over 300 brand new AI products globally. The avalanche is already here.
If we connect this to the bigger picture,
mm-hmm.
we are facing a scenario where cheap, highly capable consumer robots from China will flood through Southeast Asia into other markets.
And if lawmakers don't act in the second half of this year?
They will be entirely at the mercy of both U.S. software policy swings and unregulated foreign hardware sitting right inside their citizens' homes.
Man, it is a profound convergence of issues. I mean, just today we've gone from 4,600 people pre-ordering 183-centimeter robotic roommates to Alibaba's quest to be the Android of robots.
Right, the world model monoculture.
Yeah, and then the 80% failure rate of... this geopolitical battle over the actual software code.
It requires a completely new way of thinking about consumer technology.
Mm-hmm.
And to wrap this up, just imagine a scenario for a second.
Okay.
Imagine you buy one of these humanoids. Over a year, Its emotion AI learns every single detail of your family's routines. It learns your emotional baselines, and it encrypts all that intimate data locally.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
But then a new geopolitical export ban hits. The software company powering it is sanctioned, or the Android-like ecosystem just goes offline.
Oh, wow.
Who actually owns the emotional data stored inside that expensive piece of metal sitting dormant in your living room? And really, is it even your companion anymore?
That is a staggering thought to end on, a huge technical and legal puzzle that we are going to have to solve very soon. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. As this technology moves from the factory floor into your home, keep questioning the mechanics behind the machines, the code driving the decisions, and the unseen policies shaping your reality. See you next time.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.